This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump in a Wednesday tweet warned Russia to get ready because American missiles will be coming as the U.S. prepares to respond to a suspected chemical weapons attack in Syria. That attack left 40 dead and sickened hundreds. Moscow blamed the attack on provocateurs linked to the White Helmets, Syrian civil defense volunteers operating in rebel-controlled areas. Both the group and the White House reject the claim. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is a White House spokesperson.
The intelligence provided certainly paints a different picture, and the president holds Syria and Russia responsible for this chemical weapons attack.
She said a number of options are available to the president. U.S. Defense Chief Jim Mattis said there is still uncertainty as to who was behind the attack.
We're still assessing the intelligence, ourselves and our allies. We're still working on this.
Is the U.S. military ready right now to conduct a retaliatory strike if ordered?
We stand ready to provide military options if they're appropriate, as the president determined.
Both Syria and Russia deny involvement. Reuters, citing two U.S. government sources, said there's evidence the toxin was deployed by helicopter.
Если какие-то ракеты полетят,
in Moscow, Russian Liberal Democratic Party leader Vladimir Zhirinovsky said if U.S. missiles fly towards Syria, most will be destroyed by Russian S-400 air defense system. In Central African Republic capital Bangui Wednesday, angry demonstrators laid out corpses of 17 people killed in clashes in front of the offices of the UN peacekeeping mission. It was the worst violence in 2 years. Peacekeepers and local security forces battled armed groups in the city's mostly Muslim PK5 neighborhood in a security sweep this week. This is VOA News. In Algeria, nearly 260 people were killed in Wednesday's plane crash near the capital, Algiers. Witnesses claim they saw a wing catch fire just after the plane took off. This witness said when he reached the scene of the crash, he saw many victims completely burned. Many of the passengers were military personnel and members of the Polisario Front, fighting for independence in Western Sahara. The Russian-built military transport was heading to the town of Tindouf on the border with Western Sahara. It is Algeria's worst air disaster. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu marked annual Holocaust commemorations by issuing a call for action following the latest suspected chemical weapons attack in Syria. He said the events of past days teach that standing up to evil and aggression is a mission that is incumbent on every generation. He described the images of Syrian children being slaughtered as horrific. The Israeli leader also invoked the lessons of World War II to call for action against Iran. Saudi Arabia Wednesday said its air defenses intercepted three ballistic missiles fired at the capital Riyadh and other cities by Yemen's Houthi rebels. There were no reports of damage or casualties. It is the fourth such attack in recent months in which the Houthis said are retaliation for airstrikes carried out by the Saudi-led coalition. As expected, Azerbaijan leader Ilham Aliyev won a fourth term as president in an election marked by opposition boycott. Ruling party official Ali Akhmedov said the incumbent received more than 80% of the votes and called it a big victory. Mr. Aliyev was first elected in 2003, 2 months before the death of his father, Haider Aliyev, who ruled the previous 10 years. France is expected to propose the first names to be blacklisted by the UN Security Council for obstructing Mali's 2015 peace agreement. The targets of the action will be subjected to a global travel ban or asset freeze. The peace deal reached between Bamako and separatists has so far failed to stop violence in northern Mali by Islamist groups. Armed men in western Niger Wednesday kidnapped a German man near the Malian border. The German is identified as a humanitarian aid worker with the group HELP and is identified as Jörg Lange. The aid worker's vehicle was said to have been overtaken by gunmen riding motorcycles. Wall Street stocks fell in Wednesday trading, weighed down in part by concerns over possible military action in Syria. Tensions have sent oil prices to their highest level since late 2014. The benchmark Dow Jones shed more than 200 points to close at 24,189. Meanwhile, notes from last month's U.S. Central Bank Policymaking Committee meeting shows optimism over growth in the economy, with rising inflation prompting a modest hike in a key interest rate in March. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. At least 257 people were killed Wednesday when a transport plane crashed in Algeria.
Dozens of ambulances could be seen in the field where the plane crashed. A nearby resident said he rushed outdoors to see what was happening after hearing an explosion around breakfast time.
That's VOA correspondent Edward Uranian in Cairo, Egypt. Amnesty International says Africa is making progress in abolishing the death penalty. A member of Zimbabwe's new political party is promising to defeat the ruling ZANU-PF if this year's election is free and fair. And an international donor conference on the crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo opens tomorrow, Friday, in Geneva.
The amount that's being requested is $1.7 billion. So we're hoping at this donor conference that donors will quadruple the efforts that they made last year.
Kimberly Bennett is Goma Protection and Advocacy Advisor for the Norwegian Refugee Council. Zimbabwe holds the first ever Miss Albino pageant, and we'll hear from a 69-year-old Burundian woman who feeds more than 200 children and orphans every Sunday. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. At least 257 people were killed Wednesday when a transport plane crashed in fields near a military base outside the Algerian capital, Algiers. Eyewitnesses say they heard an explosion before seeing the plane crash and burn in nearby fields. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Algerian TV showed video of the military transport plane burning on the ground as plumes of white and black smoke billowed into the air and flames licked the sides of the plane's fuselage. Dozens of ambulances could be seen in the field where the plane crashed. A nearby resident said he rushed outdoors to see what was happening after hearing an explosion around breakfast time. He says that he was indoors when he heard the explosion, including a big bang, and then he saw thick plumes of smoke when he went to see what was happening. He said it was a real catastrophe, and everyone was afraid there would be more explosions. Young men, he says, were coming to take pictures of the crash, and he says he called the police and civil defense forces. Another man explained that he and others were not able to get close to the crash after the police arrived. He says that the plane was taking off from the Boufarik military base when it crashed and that firefighters came quickly to try to put out the fire. He says that bodies were scattered all around the wrecked plane, but that he wasn't actually able to get near the wreckage. Other eyewitnesses who saw the crash from a nearby highway told Algerian TV that the pilot appeared to have had technical problems before veering off to the right and crashing in a field. The pilot had the presence of mind to veer off to the side so as not to hit the highway during morning rush hour, the witness said. A young man by the name of Sadiq, who lost his brother in the crash, cried as he spoke with journalists. He said that his brother called him before he left on the plane that crashed and told him that he missed him and wished him well. Air safety analyst Mohamed Ben Zarouk told Algeria's On Nahar TV that the plane was heading to the far-off region of Tindouf and then to Bouchar and had no doubt filled up his fuel tanks to maximum capacity. Other analysts indicated that the Russian-built Ilyushin 78 transport plane was originally designed to fuel fighter jets in the air. Algerian air defense head Bakush Alash told journalists that there would be an investigation into the crash as well as an investigation of the type of plane which went down. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The Norwegian Refugee Council is calling on the international community to quadruple funding for the humanitarian crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This comes as a pledging conference for the DRC opens tomorrow, Friday, in Geneva. The UN says more than 13 million people are in desperate need of humanitarian assistance in the DRC, where violent conflicts have spread to new parts of the country. The conference hopes to raise $1.7 billion for the DRC, where more than 5 million people have been internally displaced or sought refuge in neighboring countries. Kimberly Bennett is Goma Protection and Advocacy Advisor for the Norwegian Refugee Council. Her organization provides food, education, and legal and security assistance to the refugees in the DRC. She says the stakes are high in the DRC, and an international inaction may lead to the loss of more civilian lives.
Well, we'd like to see donors put in a strong effort to fund what we use here in the humanitarian community called the Humanitarian Response Plan, where a budget is laid out for the humanitarian response in a particular country. And in this case, it's DR Congo. The amount that's being requested is $1.7 billion. So we're hoping at this donor conference that donors will quadruple the efforts that they made last year and try to do their best to fund the majority of that humanitarian response plan budget.
Goma Protection, I'm assuming you are in Goma, DRC, is that correct?
I am in Goma.
Mm-hmm. So how would you describe the crisis itself in the area there?
Well, the crisis in DRC has intensified and expanded over the last couple of years. We know of the longstanding unrest in the east of the country where I am, in the Kivus, north and south. But now, over the last 2 years, we've seen the conflict spread into areas that were some of the most calm areas of the country, for instance, the Grand Kasai region and Tanganyika, which shows a kind of worrying trend with regards to the size and scale and scope of the conflict. So with this, we've seen a significant increase in the number of people who are in need of protection and humanitarian assistance. Last year, it was 8.5 million. This year, it's 13 million.
Your organization is making this appeal to the international community to step up and be generous. Up to now, we're not sure if the DRC government is going to be at the conference.
We really do not have an opinion as to the decision of a government to participate or not participate in a donor conference. What I can say is that at this point, the onus is on the international donor community to step up to the plate. Last year, the humanitarian response plan budget was only 52% fulfilled, which resulted in only 4.2 million of the 8.5 million were in need of assistance being reached. That isn't acceptable.
How is your organization, what sort of assistance is your organization rendering to, say, the people in the region or the refugees?
The Norwegian Refugee Council was responsible for 15% of the total number of people in need that were reached last year. Like I'd mentioned before, 4.2 million were reached last year. NRC reached 15% of that total, so 618,000 people in need. And we've reached them through assistance and activities in education, food security, legal assistance and information counseling, as well as emergency response.
Kimberly, so nice to talk with you, and thank you very much for picking up the phone.
Thank you so much.
Kimberly Bennett is Goma Protection and Advocacy Advisor for the Norwegian Refugee Council. She was speaking with me from Goma in Eastern DRC. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 12th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Amnesty International says Africa is making progress in abolishing the death penalty ahead of the launch of its International Death Sentence annual report this Thursday. Robert Shivambu, spokesperson for Amnesty International in Southern Africa, talked to viewers Sebastian Mofu in Harare, who files this report.
The report for 2018 says Sub-Saharan Africa is a, quote, beacon of hope, unquote, as global executions and death sentences slide. The RISE group says Guinea is the 20th country in Sub-Saharan Africa to abolish the death penalty for all crimes, while Kenya abolished the mandatory death penalty for murder. Burkina Faso and Chad also took steps to repeal this punishment with new or proposed laws. Here is Robert Shivambu, the spokesman for Amnesty International in Southern Africa, summing up the 2018 report released this Thursday.
The region that showed most significant progress towards abolition was Sub-Saharan Africa. Recorded death sentences decreased from at least 1,086 in 2016 to at least 878 in 2017. The number of executing countries dropped from 5 in 2016 to 2 last year, as 3 countries that carried out executions in 2016, Botswana, Nigeria and Sudan, did not do so in 2017. However, we already know that Botswana and Sudan have resumed executions in 2018.
Shivambu says capital sentence no longer have space in democracy and was still optimistic that more African countries would abolish death sentences, as in 1981 it was only Cape Verde in Sub-Saharan Africa which had abolished capital punishment. Now the number stands at 20. Amnesty International's Shivambu again.
So we are clearly making progress. In March, Zimbabwe commuted the death sentences of prisoners who have been on death row for more than 10 years, signaling a positive step forward. President Emmerson Mnangagwa has taken a very progressive step, but he must build on this positive momentum by ensuring Zimbabwe abolishing the death penalty completely. There's no credible evidence that the death penalty has a greater deterrent effect on crime. Justice is not served by executions, but by systems that are fair, accountable, and effective in preventing and detecting crime.
The Amnesty International report says the Middle East and North Africa region recorded the highest number of drug-related executions in 2017, while the Asia-Pacific region had the most countries resorting to the death penalty for this type of offense. Worldwide, Amnesty International said it recorded at least 993 executions in 23 countries in 2017, that's about 40 less from the previous year. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Zimbabwe's newly formed National Patriotic Front, the NPF party, which is linked to former President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace, is promising to defeat the ruling ZANU-PF in the forthcoming general elections if such polls are free and fair. The NPF, which has been holding consultation meetings around the country, is calling for the withdrawal of so-called political commissars because they might cause havoc in most communities ahead of the polls. Eunice Sandy Moyo is acting chairperson of the National Patriotic Front Party. She tells Gabe Stube of VOA Zimbabwe service that she is prepared to die in order to restore the legacy of former President Mugabe and the late Zimbabwean Vice President Joshua Nkomo, who, she said, fought hard to liberate the country from white colonial rule.
I respect all what Comrade Mugabe has done in this country, and I respect the two leaders. We respect them because they created a platform for us to fight the colonialists. And that platform, we need to respect them. Whatever happened is not fair, and no one likes it, but it's a platform that we feel the legacy of Zimbabwe must be kept and must not be destroyed. I am one of the liberators. It was never an intention of the liberation struggle for us to want to cling to this thing and remove the younger people from participating. That is our generation. That is our future.
What you are saying here is that you were actually pushed out of the party because you people wanted to create a situation where youngsters are going to take over from the then president, Mr. Mugabe, and others.
Everything you do, preparations. There was a system of succession in terms of the young people who mostly were deputies and others were ministers.
And there were indications that the First Lady wanted to have a cake in that kind of situation. Maybe that's why the army intervened.
That now is a political, factional thing. It has got nothing to do with the country. Because if the First Lady wanted that, there was a system. And the system was not to elect her if she comes in. If she tries, she was not going to be elected. Even if the president tried that, he would have been rejected by the people.
We see that you have got symbols of the former president and that of the former vice president, Joshua Nkomo. Tell us a bit about why you decided to have those symbols on your T-shirts.
Because that's one of our objectives, to teach our children, the people who were behind and who were actually administering the liberation struggle. Just like all the other guys, Tongo Kara and Jason Moyo, were all people who were liberators. And there is no way that those people can just be forgotten because some people feel they have the right to the country. If they have the right, let them do it through the vote. Their president promised credible elections. We need that. No chicanery, no nothing. No harassment.
You are going for ZANU-PF head on here, yeah?
I am not going to say that. I am saying this is not a war against ZANU-PF. This is a war of liberating the people to discuss using the Constitution of Zimbabwe.
Do you fear for your lives after doing what you are doing?
I have confidence that whatever they have promised the world, they will follow. But if they do that, it will be an unfortunate situation which I can do nothing about.
Eunice Sandy Moyo is acting chairperson of the National Patriotic Front Party of Zimbabwe. She spoke from Harare with Gibbs Dube of the Zimbabwe Service. The first ever Miss Albino pageant was held in Zimbabwe recently in order to raise awareness about the health issues albinos face and to decrease stigma around the condition. The event's founder, Brenda Mozimu, said it was such a success that she hopes to expand its reach to include men next year. Mozimu spoke to with Ricky Shryak about her motivations and issues facing albinos in Zimbabwe.
I grew up as a someone with albinism. I always wanted to take this part so as to raise awareness and to instill confidence within the albinism community to avoid social factors that may lead to stress, low self-esteem, and again, as well as to shine while we are highlighting the challenges that we face as people living with albinism.
What are some of those challenges that maybe are specific to Zimbabwe?
We face a lot of problems. Like even it's not that easy to get like sunscreen lotion. As we, if we expose to sun, we develop skin cancer, which is very bad to us. So we are facing problems like getting sunscreen lotions and sometimes even discrimination because some people don't even accept people living with albinism in the community. And they see as if it's a case to have someone with albinism. So you find that it's not easy to be accepted in the community, especially when you are different from other people. You will be just like teased because you are different from others. And even at school, you will be bullied.
Are there issues with being seen as someone who is smart if you're an albino? Or are there issues with in the workplace? It's hard to get a job if you suffer from it. Is that true?
Yes, it's very true. It's not that easy to get a job. Let's say I'm even the example. That's why I was motivated to have this Miss Albinism pageant. Because B, I tried to look for a job and I was not even accepted at those workplaces. And they were doubting me, saying, what can she do? She cannot do anything if she's someone with albinism. And you're not even accepted. You go to look for a work, confident, knowing what you want to do. But you'll be very disappointed because you'll be not accepted at workplaces.
What kind of reaction did you get in the public about this pageant?
People are really becoming positive about this pageant because they did not know that we even have that beauty, and they did even not know that we are a lot of people, like in Zimbabwe, living with albinism. People were very surprised that you are men like this, because they were not even aware that we can also do the same thing like this pageant and everything. So this pageant was not all about the beauty. No, it's, I was just looking for somebody to be an ambassador of albinism community who will stand for us as albinism community, who can talk on behalf of people living with albinism.
This was a pageant focused on women. What about men who have albinism?
They are not even accepted, but as we went, as we are going on, we will be just including even men with albinism, as this is an annual event.
That was Brenda Mazimu, founder of the Miss Albino pageant in Zimbabwe. She was speaking to Ricky Strayaki from Harare, a 69-year-old Burundian woman who feeds more than 200 children and orphans every Sunday, says she started the practice more than 20 years ago during Burundi's brutal civil war. Moses Havyarimana has the story of Christine Ntaye from Bujumbura.
Christine Nahe, commonly known as Mama Sunday, is a 69-year-old veteran journalist who is striving to feed street children or those without their parents. She started gathering street kids in 1994 when the country experienced a civil war that was between the Hutu and the Tutsi ethnic groups. Christine Nahe explains what drove her to help street kids.
Europa, kukusangira dimanche.
She says that the meal of sharing every Sunday, she considered it as a way to thank God that she is still alive. She says that many go to church every Sunday, and for her, instead, she decided to feed children so as they can at least forget the leftovers they go for in the dustbins. This is how Christine Nahe's home sounds like when the street kids arrive for lunch during Sundays. Born in 1949 in Bujumbura province, Nahe lost her father at a very early age. Since the death of her father, she lived in a difficult condition, and this made her experience how life is for the street kids. She says that children need love, with no exception from those living on the streets. Nahe says that these children need to feel like they are like other people, and that if not taken good care of, they can be easily manipulated or tempted to commit crimes. Nahe is a mother of four children and became a widow in 1992 after spending 21 years in marriage. Her journalism career at the state broadcaster came to an end in 1999. She was naturally attached to orphans and street kids who needed support. This is one of the street children praying before they have their meal, asking God to bless the food they are going to eat and bless the one who provided them lunch. For a 69-year-old woman who doesn't have a stable financial source, one may wonder how she manages to feed over 200 children every Sunday. But Nahe believes that God provides her with what she can feed these children every Sunday. Christine Nahe won awards both on national and international level, including being selected among the 1,000 peace women across the globe. Not only she provides them with meal, but she has taken a few back to school. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. At least 257 people were killed Wednesday when a transport plane crashed in fields near a military base outside the Algerian capital, Algiers. And the Norwegian Refugee Council is calling on the international community to quadruple funding for the humanitarian crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This comes as a pledging conference for the DRC opens tomorrow, Friday, in Geneva. And that's it for this Thursday, April 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington. Have a good day, Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.